Your news now. National Post Radio with Anthony Fury on Canada Talks. Sirius XM, Channel 167.
We are living alone. We are bowling alone in Canada. That is what the latest Statistics Canada data shows us. More Canadians living alone and without children. Census figures show, that is the headline of a story at CBC News. Canadians are living increasingly alone and without children. The number of Canadians living alone increased to its greatest share since Confederation and was the most common type of household in the country in 2016, representing 28.2% of all households in Canada. That is an increase from 25.7% in 2001. Fully 13.9% of the Canadian adult population now live alone. That figure stood at, get this, just 1.8% in 1951. This is just one of the items that came out of census data revealed yesterday. We're joined now by Andrea Morozik, Family Program Director at the Cardis Family Studies Think Tank, joining us on the line now from Ottawa. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. You and Cardis write a lot about these sorts of issues. What's the main thing that stood out to you from this new census data?
Well, two things, I think. One is that the trend lines are in place for a couple of decades and they haven't really changed. So we see declining marriage, increasing cohabitation, and then fewer children. So you see what you just spoke about. We're bowling alone. That's such a great book. But the trend lines are in place for that. So we weren't surprised by it. The other aspect, I think, which you've touched on in your intro here, is that social isolation factor. So some of the commentary on the census release has been that, women are more empowered and financially independent, and that's why we're living alone. That would be a good reason, but there's other reasons that could be possible. Namely, we have an aging society, and our elderly tend to be living alone as their partners and spouses pass away. That is not a positive trend, and most Western developed nations are struggling with social isolation and how to deal with that. So just two thoughts off the top there.
Yeah, well, and also that idea of, women being empowered and prospering in the workplace, and I'm all in support of that, but I don't think that necessarily has to mean isolation. You know, the idea of a perfect gender-equal society is women just, living sadly alone. I don't know many women who say that is their sort of ultimate goal in life, even if they also want to be on track for CEO.
Yeah, well, thanks for raising that. When we look at statistics, what people want, men and women both say in surveys at a relatively young age, so you could say they're just idealistic or maybe naive, I don't know, but most people will say that they would like to get married. And I'm not sure that we all want to be living alone. I'm not sure that's a positive development when we look at what some of our the trends that some of us are struggling with, and that includes mental health problems in our culture and society. Some, not all of that is going to be correlated with loneliness and the anxiety that comes with that. So I don't want to go too much into musing about why we are living alone, but I wouldn't want to be saying it's a positive trend either.
Well, you said that this is a trend that has been put in place for decades, but it's now clearly at a tipping point. When we break down the 2016 census by types of household, we have 28% of people are one-person households, which is a lot of loneliness. And then in terms of couples, 27% with children, 26% without children. So that is the number of couples without children matching pretty much those with children. That's got to be new as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to look at just having freedom of choice for families and for people to decide what they want, but ultimately, I wonder about barriers that are put in place to people being able to fulfill their family desires. So on that note, if we look at the way education is structured, and women and men have to go through higher education, lots of education, pay lots of money for that education, and then the inevitable result is you need to work to pay off the debt from your education. By the time all of that is done, and we have delayed age for first marriage in Canada as well, you aren't really left with the choice of what you want for your family size. So, for example, if you get married at age 38, your choices around how many children you have are severely curtailed simply by Mother Nature. So, yeah, if we're going to talk about choices and freedom to decide what we want to do, we have to look at some of the way our society is structured, and it does lead us in a particular direction, which may or may not be people's choice.
You know, Andrew, you're picking up on something I lament a lot, this sort of over-credentialization of society. I don't think we need to do it. I mean, back in the day, in the 50s or whatever, you graduate from high school, and then you go work at the bank or the insurance company, and you just learn the tricks of the trade there while you're there, and you make your way up. And there's guys who are CEOs right now who many of them don't have all that much formal education. Now it's like you do high school, then you do some year to find yourself in Europe, and then you do your BA in like philosophy or whatever, which I did, but a lot of people find that kind of useful. So then they go into college, or they go into some professional school, and they have to do some B2B back to business program, and they have to do an internship, and so, you know, and they've been partying the whole time, and then they get to, you know, even like 28, 29, and they think I'm going to seriously date and so forth. And a lot of women I know, I'm in my sort of mid-30s now, I know a lot of really lovely, intelligent, you know, beautiful, great women who are just finding themselves at a loss for being able to build a family, and they want to.
Yeah, we have, there's this concept in academia called life script, and our life scripts have changed dramatically. So it used to be, finish high school, you meet someone, you get married, you build your life together, you have children. This sort of life script has altered dramatically, and we have delayed adolescence and a lot more finding oneself, if you will, into the 30s age range. I also got married very late, so I speak from personal experience when I talk about the lack of choice and the number of children you'd want to have. So it's definitely a cultural moment where we need to look at our choices and ensure that we leave ourselves the freedom. But the irony is, of course, I can't transplant my 40-year-old brain into a 20-year-old woman who I meet or what have you. That's pretty hard to do.
We have a whole lot of social schisms going on that are really prolonging adolescence in deleterious ways. We already have a birth rate that's really not at a replenishing our population rate, and if this is the way we say all countries should be heading, I mean, we just into the statistical decline of humanity. The popular novelist Hilary Mantel wrote a really interesting piece a few years ago that I remember, where she suggested girls should be having babies at the age of like 17 or 18, do what they did back in Shakespearean era, because she was a scholar of Elizabethan times, and she said, you marry, a 28-year-old or 30-year-old guy marries an 18-year-old girl, she gets pregnant then, and by all means, if you want to go and have a BA and go on and be a CEO or whatever, women can still do it, but you just have the kids early and then get them sent off to school, and then you're 22 and you start your life again, rather than having to upheave it mid-career. I think it's an interesting idea, and of course, she was widely condemned for that.
Yeah, well, the feminist side of me thinks that women today are compelled to play by male rules, which leads us to be in a position of wanting to have children at an age when, again, Mother Nature doesn't necessarily work with you. It's something that is, I think it's unfortunate, and it doesn't sound particularly feminist, but the problem is if Mother Nature isn't going to allow women to have children past a certain age, then we have to understand that, and I think that our culture would need to be moving in a direction of accepting more parents in the workplace, and particularly more mothers in the workplace. I plenty of times have heard women say the problem isn't discrimination against women in the workplace, it's discrimination against mothers, that they have obligations outside of the workplace, can't work till 9 p.m., need to pick up kids, this sort of thing. So, there's lots of discussion out there on flex and work-life balance and this sort of thing. And I view that as largely positive because when we look internationally, there's Japan as an example of how we don't want to end up where people are not marrying, they are not having children, the government is at their wit's end, they can't continue social programs or what have you. And I might add, if we return to where we started, there's plenty of wacky and wild trends in Japan to overcome loneliness, creation of dolls that you can hold, and places where businessmen can go and cuddle with a woman, and it's not prostitution, it's really just like
cuddling.
To experience human touch.
Well, and you don't get married to a woman anymore, you just get a sex robot. So you're sort of living alone, but it's, forget bowling alone, it's fornicating alone.
Yeah, so there's some trends out there I don't think we want to see, and if we would like to examine those trends from the census yesterday, I think it's incumbent on all of us as individuals to be looking around us in our neighborhoods and our communities and seeing who might be living alone and what that means for them. Whether it's an empowered choice or whether it's something that's a lonely life and we can step in and be better neighbors and a better community, right?
Yeah, I'm with you on changing sort of workplace culture. I think telework is a thing that we should be looking at, with whether it's for traffic congestion reasons or just for having flexibility with kids. I mean, the idea that I've always found the idea people are working like 12 hours a day now at their jobs is just nuts, because you're not getting good quality out of them. As a business owner, a manager, or whatever, I wouldn't even want people in the office. You go away, go have a drink, go play volleyball or whatever you do, and you'll come back the next day refreshed. It seems like we're kind of all out of whack with this sort of workaholism that doesn't foster good families and probably doesn't foster productivity.
Well, and if we look again at the census family data, we aren't making time for families. We aren't choosing to make time for marriage. And these, you know, the old cliche is that nobody ever wished they spent more time at work on their deathbed. So the family census data basically is indicating that family is a lower priority for Canadians, that we come to it later in life and have, you know, more of us are living without children and alone. So the family is an institution. That's why CARDIS is interested in it. And we look at those institutions that build up civil society. And it used to be that family really made up that basis of civil society. And now we have all this academic talk about post-familialism. Do we actually rely on our families anymore? And I think we would be weaker for it were we to tip over into, for example, not to blame or single out Japan too much, but if we were to tip in that direction, then you have bigger social problems on your hands.
We are, though. You know, Andrea, I was just writing in a recent column that the phrase civil society is something that I bet a lot of younger millennials, you know, 20-year-olds, you ask them what that term is, they've probably never heard of it before. We have become so addicted to this sort of creeping socialism we have in society this day and age that they don't even get the idea of sort of families coming together as a community to make their society stronger. And that is, I think, what these numbers that you're talking about forebode in a really worrisome way.
Yeah, it is a worrying trend. I will inject the other aspect of the census data is slightly more positive, was that we see more intergenerational families. I think that's probably a result of an immigrant community coming to Canada from different places where they have a different idea of family, all told. So there's that trend as well. And you know, I'm no immigration expert, but on the family front, I think in instances, the concept of family that's coming to us from other countries in the world is a tighter and more robust version. There could, of course, be other reasons why people are living together, cost being one of them, housing is expensive, what have you, but I'm of course an immigrant daughter, and I do think that where my parents are from in Eastern Europe, there's a different idea of the prioritization of family. So maybe we can have a positive view of that type of trend if it means that on the family file that families are stronger.
Well, sure. Some of the largest source countries for immigration to Canada, China, India, South Korea, some others on the top 10 list, they have a much more robust sense of sort of the unified nuclear family than sort of general North American culture has right now.
Yeah. Indeed, they have just different ideas on family and living together and honoring your elders. These would be virtues that I think take greater priority in cultures other than our own, and we can learn from that. So, yeah, on immigration stuff, I'm out of my depth. So more interested in know a little bit more on the family file, but I didn't want it to be all doom and gloom. I think if we want to try and spin that positively, then hopefully we could learn something from those families coming from elsewhere. And Canada is, of course, built on immigration. So,
Andrea Morozik is the Family Program Director at the CARDIS Family Studies. That's a think tank in Ottawa. Andrea, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And check out CARDIS Family website and the broader CARDIS think tank organization for all the sort of papers and reports they write on these issues. Matthew Fisher, standing by, Post Media Senior Overseas Reporter. We're going to get him on the line to talk about some of the big international stories. I'm Anthony Fury. This is SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.